this isn't really a continuation from last week, because I finished last week's, and whatever was said was said. But I did want to remind you of one little point that was made within that article, which I'm not going to quote again, and that was that there was a claim that the halacha is against being codified and getting to one particular decision. As I said, independently of all that, in this week's parsha, we have actually a terrible machloket that took place. And the way the machloket is described in Pirkei Avot is the machloket of Korach and Adato. Korach and his henchmen, if you will. And as is pointed out by the commentaries on the Mishnah, that it doesn't say machloket Korach v'Moshe. It's the machloket has been Korach and his henchmen, which, by the way, is interesting. Some commentaries point out that it's quite likely that even within their confederation or confederacy, there was not one unified perspective. That even there were differences of opinion, which I think is can be supported as far as the Pshat and the Chumash goes. Towards the end of the whole section, we have a verse, which is in source number one, and it reads as follows. I mean, you get the feeling that we're entering in the middle, which we are, but that's the verse nonetheless. Perek Yud Zayin Pasuk Hey. Zikaron levnei Yisrael leman asher lo yikrav ish zar asher lo mizer aron hu laktir ktoret levnei Hashem v'lo yekikorach v'cha'adato kasher diber Hashem biyad Moshe lo. It speaks about something which needs to be done by the Mizbeach, which will then create a physical memorial for the children of Israel to end that no common man that is not of the seed of Aaron draw near to burn incense before God. And then it says that he fare not as Korach. If we look at the Hebrew again, v'lo yeke Korach. That means that this memorial is to remind people that there's a distinction between Korach and between the Kohanim and between others, not to behave as Korach behaves in order not to have the same punishment that Korach had. Kasher diber Hashem biad Moshe lo. Now, the pshat in this pasuk is telling us to do something with the Mizbeach. The pshat in this pasuk is, it sounds like it's a warning not to behave. It sounds like a warning that people should remember that they should not do what Korach did. Rashi, not right over here, but Rashi earlier in the narrative, tells us in source 2, Vayishlach Moshe, that Moshe went and he sent a message to Datan Varviran, and Rashi here tells us, Mikan she'ein machzikin b'machloket. You can learn from this that a person is not supposed to allow a machloket. Now, I have a hard time translating machzikin b'machloket, so I'm going to translate it as that you shouldn't strengthen a machloket, or you shouldn't hold on to a machloket. She'ei Moshe machzir achareim lahashlimam b'divrei shalom. That Moshe endeavored, he came after them, he reached out to them in order to try to create peace. What could Moshe have done? Moshe could have sat and said, listen, I'm Moshe, and you people are doing terrible things, and that could have been the end of it. Instead, Moshe does what he can to try to create peace. The reason Rashi is saying this, other than Rashi thinks that that is what Moshe is doing over here by sending that message, is that there's a Gemara, and let's look at it. Source number 3. V'yakom Moshe v'yelech el Datan v'aviran, which, by the way, is not the same part that Rashi just now explained. Rashi's talking about an earlier episode where Moshe sent a message. Rashi said he's trying to create peace. Here, the Gemara is going after when Moshe gets up. Amareish lakish mikan she'en machzikin ma'machloket. From here, we see that a person's not supposed to, again, hold on to strengthen machloket. Why would Rashi have made that comment on the earlier verse? Once the Gemara points out that this is Moshe's motivation, then it becomes apparent that was his motivation in that earlier episode as well, even though the Gemara learns it from a later act of Moshe, because when Moshe actually stands up and goes there himself, you can say that's very demeaning. So again, there's two stages. One, Moshe sends a message. Two, Moshe himself goes. Which does Gemara learn bring as the proof The Gemara brings the proof that Moshe himself goes, because that's a very strong proof. Why does Rashi mention this by the earlier case? Because once I realize it by the other case, which is stronger, now I can discern that that was Moshe's motivation by the earlier episode as well, and that would seem to be the logic of Rashi. Correct? Correct? Correct. The Amar Rav, and this is then supported by an opinion of Rav, Kol HaMachzik B'Machloket, now that's the flip side of this, anybody who holds on or strengthens a Machloket, Over Bilav, they have broken a negative commandment of the Torah. So now, it sounds like what Rav just now did, is he turned this into one of the 613 commandments, one of the 365 negative commandments. And what would that be according to Rav? Creating, causing, or strengthening an argument. So therefore, Moshe is aware of the 613 commandments. Therefore, Moshe does all that he can to stop the argument from growing. And that's why Moshe goes there. As I said, this is supported by Rav. Because what does Rav say? That there's a negative commandment in order to strengthen a machloket. How does Rav know that there's a negative commandment? Shenemar, he quotes a verse, "V'lo yeh k'korach v'chadato," which he's apparently translating, "and thou shalt not be like Korach and like his henchmen." Now, do you like that conclusion of Rav, or not necessarily? Yes. Doesn't say you have to agree, but he's going in order to maybe to explain his position. That's a very good question. What's the definition? But Moshe's behavior over here. Doesn't necessarily mean you have to back down. Moshe's going to try to work things out. Yeah? Whether that's true or not true, that's not the issue over here. Sometimes it could be. Gid Hanasha is based. I mean, there are others that are. That's not the main issue. Yeah? Yeah? Well, you're getting closer to the point. When, yeah?
But Moshe is the leader, and he is going to them to talk to them. So, I think it's a very good leader of Moshe to be
right.
that he is doing this.
Right. And the question is...
Maybe they will change their mind.
Right. The question is it midat chasidut? Is he going beyond the letter of the law? Is he being... Again, Moshe is exceptionally modest, and there's all kinds of things we can say about Moshe. Is this actually the law? What does Rav say? Yeah, this is indicative of a law. There's a law over here. What's the law? The law is that you should not let a machloket grow. And how does he know that it's a law? He quotes a verse, yeah? Right.
And the question is how far.
Right.
And the how far here is not exactly stressed or mentioned.
Right. So to answer that question and to get that out of the way a bit, because then that's a very important question, if we'll go into Gemara, and we could have made this 10 times the size of the sources, I hope you appreciate the saving the trees over here, if we would have gone into a lot more in terms of Gemara's that talk about Machloket, but let's just touch one that we went into last week. And that's the one between Hillel and Shammai. The Gemara at the very end tells us something which the Gemara finds surprising, at least on some level. It says that between Hillel and Shammai, there was ultimately a relationship of ahava, v'achva, v'shalom, v'rayut. One of complete brotherhood. And says not only that, it says not only was there mutual respect, and they lived in one community. And not only that, it says their children married or intermarried from one school to the other, one family to the other, and this was one community. The Gemara then says, how can this possibly be? Okay, and it goes into all kinds of cases that they argue about. And says, but what about this case? And what if this happens? What if this happens? For example, there's a totally theoretical law. Ever watch a wedding? Ever watch a wedding up close? And then the rabbi's there, and they got the two witnesses, and then he has to see the ring, and then he turns to the witnesses and says, is this ring worth a, worth a pruta? Is it sheva pruta? Right? So how much is a pruta? What? Yeah, yeah. A pruta is not very much. Did you know that Hillel and Shammai argued if to get married you need a pruta or you need a larger amount? Shammai said you need a slightly larger amount. Now, that's a theoretical question because no woman's getting married with a pruta or with a larger amount. Right? She wants something which is far more significant. I mean, again, I can assure you that if a guy tries to pull off a ring made which is worth a pruta and a half, we're going to have some issues over here. What is a problem is the other way around, is that when sometimes kids can take something which is really almost valueless, and I stress almost valueless, and then say to some girl, oh, hurry up, mukudeshitli with this, so then you've just caused yourself all kinds of problems because it could be that that is worth more than a pruta. But the Gemara then says, well, what if two men approached this woman? One married her first with the value of a pruta, and the second married, according to Shammai, with a larger value. So according to Hillel, they married to the first one. According to Shammai, married to the second one. Let's say she had a child with the second one. According to Shammai, that child is completely fine. According to Hillel, that child is a mamzer. And then you can keep on going. So the Gemara says, how can they possibly have married? So the Gemara says, God looked out for them in such cases, never really happened. That these again, and how do I know it never really happened? Because of course that's not really going to happen. But the Gemara says is that God protected them and that there was never really cases like this. But what's the important thing? The important thing is that each one accepted the validity that the other one had a right to have an opinion. Each one accepted that the other one was a bona fide, religious, halachic opinion, and therefore even though there's the machlokah between them, and sometimes they seem quite profound, even though, by the way, we get fooled sometimes, Hillel and Shammai themselves did not argue about all that many things. Hillel and Shammai themselves, there's very, very limited amount of things that they disagreed about. The school of Hillel, Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, had more things that they argued about. But they were essentially part of one community, even though there were differences between the two, and that does not seem to be any problem. What Korach is doing is he's trying to attack the validity of Aaron, and ultimately, therefore, to attack the validity of Moshe, which, by the way, ultimately may actually be the validity of God, but that's part of the intrigue within the portion. So therefore, if I have a machloket, and again, you can have very, very severe arguments between two different rabbinic, that doesn't mean they don't respect the other person's right to have another opinion. They can think that the person's dead wrong, but that would not, having somebody else having a different opinion is not necessarily the problem over here. What is the problem? Or what is this halacha? What are the parameters of this type of thing? That's something which we'll see as we move on. So all of you missed the right answer that I was looking for. And if I was looking for it, then obviously it was the right answer. And what's that? How exactly do you get from these words in the Chumash that this is a lav, that this is a negative prohibition? The Torah says something else. The Torah says that you should make a memorial, again, a physical memorial, you should make a memorial that people should remember, that they should, should remember that they shouldn't end up becoming like Korach Vadato. It doesn't say thou shalt not be. It only says thou shalt not be like Korach Vadato if you take it out of its context. The Gemara continues a little bit more longer. Rav Ashi Amar, Ra'ui litztare'eh, that if somebody gets involved in machloket, it's worthwhile that they should get sarat. K'tiv hacha b'yad Moshe lo, v'k'tiv hatam v'yomer shem lo adaba noyodcha b'chekecha. So it says that somebody who gets involved in these things makes a gzeret shava in terms of the hand of Moshe, and the hand of Moshe is here, and the hand of Moshe was when Moshe's hand became leprous, and therefore the Gemara says not only if you encourage machloket, are you breaking a law, but you even should be struck because of it. The Rif and the Rush take the Gemara at face value. They don't like my question. Look at the Rif in source number 4. Amar Rav kol machzav machloket over belav. Shenemar v'lo yekakorach v'achadato. Black and white. That the Rif quotes that part of the Gemara, establishing this as law. If somebody is machzik b'machloket, they broke a negative commandment. The Rush does the same thing. Amar Rav kol machzav machloket over belav. Shenemar v'lo yekakorach. So over here we find, at least for the Beit Yosef, those who are going to be two out of his three amudei psika, two out of the three pillars that he uses when he looks for psak halacha. Of course, the Beit Yosef uses the Rif, the Rosh, and the Rambam. So here we just now found two very prominent Rishonim who believed, as I said, take the Gemara at face value and believe that there is an absolute law which is broken when one encourages machloket to grow. Source number six, the Rambam, and at first we're going to see the Rambam talking in his Sefer HaMitzvot, his book of mitzvot, and not only in a Sefer HaMitzvot, this is in his introduction to the Sefer HaMitzvot, where he has a proper introduction, and then he has principles. He calls them Shorashim. In Shorash number eight, he writes, and we're just jumping into the middle, he claims there are certain verses that say things that are not meant to be mitzvot, either positive or negative, but they are being told as part of a narrative, and they're being used in a slightly different way, and let's look at what he says. V'chein amru, furthermore it said, v'loye kekorach v'adato hu shlila. It's talking about a negative trait, which means he's not telling us that it's necessarily a prohibition. U'biyaru hachamim shu shlila, u'pirshu inyano v'amru shehu yitales siper lanu shekom misha chlok ala ku'una v'yorerba lo yachul bo ma shehigia bekorach v'adato min abliya v'asrifa aval amnam ye onsho kasher diber Hashem b'yad Moshe. Which means it seems to be that at first the Rambam is focusing on that last line of the Gemara. What was the last line? That whoever is involved in machloket should be hurt. What happened to Korach when he was involved in this? Very bad things happened to Korach, right? The earth swallowed him up. What happened to 250 men? They got burnt alive. Why? So he's saying because they're involved in machloket. And therefore, he's saying anybody that's involved in machloket, it's not going to happen to you, which means there was a one-time thing that the earth goes swallowing people up. That's not going to happen every time. But do you deserve something to happen to you? Yeah. And here the Torah is saying, don't be like Korach in order not to have things happen to you, because that's what's going to happen when you act like Korach. The Rambam also threw in one other interesting thing along the way here, which was by virtue of going straight back to the narrative. And what was that? Mishiachlok al kahuna. Somebody who argues on the kahuna. Which that's a very narrow case. It doesn't say people who argue about other things. You know, the biggest fights that take place in Judaism is whether you say Av HaRachman on certain weeks, you don't say Av HaRachman. So then you have some people saying our minhag is to say it, minhag is not to say it. And in most shuls, the minhag is to fight, right, about whether to say it or not to say it. That's the minhag. The minhag is to fight every year. So Baruch Hashem, people continue to keep up that minhag. According to this, none of these cases, of all things that we argue about, is a problem. The only problem would be what? The only problem is to argue kuna. You find that amusing? You're going to use it? That's important.
Okay.
So, although the Rambam then continues, and he says that something should happen, Ratzalom or Hatzarat, which means mainly the Tzarat, like Moshe got. And we'll skip a little bit, because then it brings the verses where Moshe got Tzarat, back to where it's underlined. The Afal Pisha Matzanu Lahim, Lashon Acher. By the way, if you don't like the language of the Rambam here, don't blame him. He wrote it in Arabic, and this is a translation to Hebrew, which is not as clear as the Rambam generally is. I hope you notice that. The Afal Pisha Matzanu Lahim, Lashon Acher. It should be Bigmara Sanhedrin. V'hu amram, kol amachzik b'machloket over b'lo ta'aseh, shenema v'lo yikkarach v'chadato. And even though we find in the Gemara that there is this opinion which is stated that whoever makes a machloket will be breaking a negative commandment, v'zeh altsad ha'asmachta. The Rambam tells us that is what we call an asmachta. Now, who here knows what an asmachta is? An asmachta is, the best word in English would be an anchor. What it means, though, is that this is not a real, bona fide Torah interpretation in the sense, it's not the rabbis trying to tell you this is what the Torah means. Rather, it's the rabbis who want to express their own idea and they find a biblical verse which is similar to it. The difference between an asmachta versus a real limud, a real teaching, is a real limud would ostensibly then result in a Torah law. When the Rambam tells us this is an asmachta, what's he telling us? That's not what the Torah means. And therefore, the rabbis were just trying to tell you you shouldn't get into a fight. Instead of just saying themselves you shouldn't get into a fight, they say, oh, look at this verse in the Torah. It sounds like it's a lotase, it's a negative commandment if you get into a fight. Which means the question that I raised before, that they took this verse out of context, and it's not really what it seems to mean in context, guess who agreed with me? The Rambam agrees, and he says, this is not what the pasuk really means. It's an asmachta. Lo shia pshita dekra bekavanah hazot. The pshat of the Torah, the simple or the most basic reading of the text, that's not what it means. Which means if you asked 100 people to read that text, it's very doubtful that most of them would have come to the conclusion that that's what that verse means. Why? Because it's not what the verse means. Are the rabbis allowed to anyway say, no, we think that this has come to teach us this? Well, yeah, the rabbi's allowed to do it. The Rambam in this case said, no. Which is the Rambam over here is arguing with the Rif and the Rush. He's really only arguing with the Rif because he never saw the Rush, but he did see the Rif. And he's arguing with the Rif and he's saying that I don't think that this is a real law. But then he throws something else at the end, which is interesting. Ulam has hara hazeh, but the rule against this, which means the warning against being involved in machloket, hu nechlal tachat lav sheni kimoshe eva erbim komo. But there is another Torah prohibition about getting into a fight that I will explain in its proper place. So now we have to go and figure out what in the world the Rambam is talking about, and we'll skip down to source number 12. And we presume that this is what he means. V'hamitzvah ha-arba'im v'chamesh, the 45th mitzvah, 45th negative commandment, hi shehizharnu me'asot seret bivsarenu, k'mo she'asu ovdei zara, v'hu amu yitaleh lo titgo didu. So let's take a look at the verse that he's quoting from, and then hopefully we'll understand a little bit of this. Source number 9. Banim atem la'Hashem Elokeichem, lo titgodudu, v'lo tasimu korcha be'eneichem lemet. This verse is telling you that when somebody dies, you should not follow the practices of the Emori, and therefore you shouldn't cut your body, which is what titgodudu means here. You shouldn't make cuts on your body, and you shouldn't, it's interesting that Korach makes his way back into this verse as well, and you should not make yourself bald up on your forehead as a response to death. So apparently there were certain Amorite practices that they would do these kinds of things. That's the context in the Chumash. Don't do what they do, rather, banim atem l'Hashem Elokeichem, you are God's children, you should not be behaving in such ways, and there's a law against making lotit go to do. Rashi in source 10 says lotit go to do. Lotit nu gdida viseret bivsarchem almet. Kiderech shem emorim osim. Don't go and cutting your body as a response to death like they do. The fishatem banim shel makom, batim ruim liot naim velo gdudim umakorchim. And you should look beautiful and you should not look cut up, nor should you look balded. And you can read that to anyone who you'd like to. Okay. Now, what in the world does this have to do with machloket? The Gemara in source number 11, Amalei Resh Lakish l'Rav Yochanan. Resh Lakish says to Rav Yochanan, Ikri kan, it says in the Chumash, lo titgo didu, lo ta'asu agudot agudot. What does the word aguda mean? What does the word kutzot, kutzot? What does the word eged mean? Eged. You get on the bus. What's an eged? An eged is a corporation. It's kutza. So he understands lo tit go to do, don't make yourselves into separate groups. Now, I have to ask you again. What did this verse in the Torah actually mean? Not to cut. Not to make cuts on your body. That's what it means in the context.
That's what you do with the Shabbat and the Gurudim when people are gathered together in separate groups the cutting, there's a cut in the family, in the community, in the nation. It's cutting yourself off from the West or whatever.
Right. But it's not what the Chumash meant, right?
No.
Okay. The Gemara says, Lo titko, to do lo tasu agudot agudot. Hai lo titko, to be bari le lagufe. To amar chman, lo tasu chabur al mate. He says, what are you talking about? What does the verse really mean? It means, don't cut yourself as a response to death. Imken le makra, lo tigo didu. So the Gemara here says, no, it should then have said, lo tigo didu, not lo titko didu. Which means, what's the difference between saying lo tigo to do would have been don't cut yourself? What's lo titgo to do? Don't put yourself into groups of groups. My titgo to do, shma mina lahochi hu da'ata. I can conclude that this comes to teach me this other teaching of not putting ourselves into separate groups. The ema kule lahochi hu da'ata. Maybe the whole thing was coming to teach us about cutting. Imkein lemakor lo tigo do. My lo tigo to do shmani atarati. You know, it comes to teach us both of these things. One, lo titgo to do, there's two different types. One is cutting your family, and the other is cutting up the community. Or cutting yourself, sorry. Cutting your body, and the other is cutting up the community, and that's what the Gemara seems to conclude over here. So now we'll go back to the Rambam in his understanding of mitzvah number 12. Mitzvah number 45 in source 12. This verse was already written in another context, in not just in Dvarim, but also in Vayikra, when it says, and there it uses the word seret instead of the, which means cut, instead of the word titko to do. The kfar hit par er b'gemara yivamot, and we already explained the gemara yivamot. Ki gufe dekra, that the basic text is coming to tell you titko to do lo tasu chavura, not to make a cut on yourself. Vine amru shebechlau lav zeh, and we were taught included in this verse. And we learn from this not to set up two different bate din, two different base dins in a community, not to have different customs in the community, and not to have two different communities. The text itself means not to cut yourself. The other one is a drasha. Furthermore, it says, and now he goes back to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, that whoever holds on to machloket is breaking a lav. That's also not the simple meaning of the text. That verse, what's it coming to tell you? To scare you. Say, don't act like Korach, because if you act like Korach, you may end up being hurt. So the Rambam is doing something very interesting here. The Rambam is deviating a little bit from what his major task normally is. And what's that? To tell us law. And what's he doing instead? He's going in and trying to explain verses and drashot. Now, at the end of the day, if you can tell me why he felt it was better to learn from Lo Titgo Didu than it was to learn from Lo Kiyek Korach, because even Lo Titgo Didu, it's not the pshat of the pasuk, unless he's claiming, again, that it's titzgo to do instead of togodu. But either way, the Rambam knows that it's not the simple reading here, it's not the simple reading there, but the Rambam seems to value that drasha of lo titzgo to do more than he values this reading, and therefore he came to the conclusion that the thing about Korach is an asmachta, it's not a bona fide isur, but there is nonetheless an isur to break or to create dissension. And what is that based on? It's based on lo titgo to do.
It's like support his will to codify the law. If you want to.
It's not him. Right, but it's not him. It's the Gemara. The Gemara said this. The Rambam, look, as you see very clearly, the Rambam is working off of two sources. And by the way, this is not the book they attacked him for. This book was fine. The book they attacked him for was the Mishnah Torah, which we'll look at in a minute, what he wrote there. Over here, what did the Rambam say? The Rambam is actually showing us what the Gemara said. He's quoting two Gemara. He's showing us what the Chumash says. He's showing us the problematic nature of deriving this straight from the Chumash. He's showing what the Gemara did, and he's showing what his preference is. He's saying that the attitude which is expressed in Sanhedrin, not to be like Korach, is a true Torah attitude, even though he's not convinced that that is the negative law. Yeah? Right.
So this is what I'm confused about. Maybe you can explain. When I use the word machloket, or when the word machloket is used in the Gemara, we're usually talking about an argument about a point of halakha. You gave a very good example of the marriage.
Right. Thank you.
My understanding of Korach's story, perhaps you can tell it differently, was that this was a case of political rebellion.
Right.
Political dissent.
Right. No one said that. No one said that. As I said from the beginning, you need to understand the parameters. And that's why that was a proper question from the beginning. And any time the two people are discussing a point of law and each accepts the authority of the others, that's something which is acceptable. But when somebody tries to get rid of the other side, that also creates the machloket, but that's the kind of dissension which is not acceptable. Let's just finish this up. So according to the Rambam, it ends up that there is a negative commandment. The negative commandment is based upon lo titko to do. To understand this commandment according to the Rambam, go back to source number 7, and now you see how the Rambam codifies law. Look where he writes this. Hilchot avodat kochavim. What will be the context of hilchot kochavim? What's of idolatry? What will he be mentioning over there? How you can't act like idolaters, and therefore you can't cut your body as a response to death. And then he throws in another thing. And included in this idea of not cutting yourself is something that you should not have two courts in one city. One follows one custom, one follows another custom. Where did he get that from? This isn't the Rambam making this up. Where did he get it from? He got it word for word from the Gemara. But now he gives a little interpretation. Shedavar zeh goreim l'machlakot gedolot. And because this approach will cause huge amounts of dissension. You have to, again, we bolded the words machlakot gedolot, because there are certain types of arguments, which, as I said, one person believes one thing, somebody else believes something else. Okay, that's one thing. And that you go and conduct yourself with respect. Over here, having two different authorities within one city is going to cause there to be fights within that city. And he says, Shenemar lo titgodin lo tasu agudot agudot. Which again, the Rambam apparently believes this is a bona fide drasha. Again, pshat in the Chumash there is not to cut your hand. But we don't only go by pshat. We also have Torah Sheba'al Peh. Torah Sheba'al Peh notices when things are written in a particular manner. In this case, the Gemara said it clearly. It could have been written in a simpler way to tell you not to cut yourself. By saying, lo tit go to do, it's telling you there's another interpretation as well, which the Rambam, he is impressed with. This teaching of that you shouldn't be like Korach, he thinks is being taken out of context and is an asmachta, and therefore he prefers this. By the way, it's interesting, the Rashi, in source number 8, explaining the idea of agudot agudot writes, forget about which words he's interpreting, below dummy l'shtei tarot. I pick this out of at least three different Rashis that says this. Rashi says the problem of agudot agudot is it ends up looking like we have two different Torahs. That they have one Torah and we have a different Torah. So he says, Rashi says the problem is that it should look like it's two different Torahs. The Rambam says the problem of agudot agudot is that it ends up becoming a huge machloket. Okay, let's pause here for a second and recap what we have seen so far. We have a pasuk in the Torah which is talking about a warning not to act like Korach, to remember not to act like Korach. The Gemara quotes that and says that this teaches us that if anybody who's machzik b'machloket, which needs to be defined, not just two people arguing in law, but somebody who causes dissension, is breaking this Torah law. We found the Rif and the Rush quote that verbatim, and therefore they understand that you're breaking the Torah law by getting into by creating dissension. The Rambam disagreed with the technicality of which verse we're quoting this from, but he ends up coming to the same conclusion because he used a different verse. So far, everything should be clear. The Ramban in source 13 understands the verse with Korach in a different way, which shouldn't surprise us because it was already hinted at a little bit within the Rambam himself. He quotes the Rambam in source 13. And let's go to the last part, which is underlined. V'zevadei eino pshita dekra. This is certainly the Gemara's interpretation is certainly not the pshat. V'lo midrash yikra l'rabotenu. It's not even the primary teaching. Well, pshat hakatuv yikarot shetiva b'rokia pachin tzafui l'mizbeach zikaron l'vnei Yisrael b'shnei dvarim. It's really putting this type of metal on the mizbeach to remember shelo yikrev ish zar laktir lakriv korban, that somebody who's not a kohen should remember that he can't bring a korban. V'shelo yachlok gam kein shum adam al kehunat Aharon lomar ki lo haitame et Hashem. And the other thing that we're supposed to remember is that you're not to have a machloket, but what's the machloket with according to the Ramban? About the kuhuna, just about the kuhuna. That the machloket over here is a machloket against kuhuna, and that's what the pasuk is saying, which means the Ramban understands when it says you shouldn't have a machloket in the Gemara, that's not the pshat. If there's a, he understands there is a lav over here, there is a negative law, there's a prohibition. What's the prohibition? The prohibition is against the machloket. Which machloket? Only one type of machloket. Which type is that? Against kuhunat aron. Let's say a firstborn were to wake up tomorrow and say, who decided that the kohanim should be the ones, Bnei Levi, it should be the firstborn, I want to go back. Or Bnei Reuven come and wake up one day and say, we believe that as the firstborn of Yaakov, we're the ones who should work in the Beit HaMikdash, and so on and so forth. So anybody who argues with the authority of Aaron and his children to be going in according to the Ramban, that is the prohibition over here. So the Ramban just now severely limited the prohibition. You'll see the Ramban is supported by a couple other authorities. Source 14 is the Sefer Yireim, Rav Elazar Mimitz. Lo yeke korach, tziva kodesh baruch, shlo yarer adam ala kuhuna. The person, this is the negative commandment, not to be like korach means that you shouldn't argue against the kuhuna. Likewise, in the smak, which is the Sefer Mitzvot Katan, he writes, shlo yarer ala kuhuna. It's again, so a number of Rishonim now go the other way. And by the way, this should be interesting for us, for one reason. Remember, the Beit Yosef, when he establishes halacha, even though this is not the kind of halacha that will necessarily make it into the Shulchan Aruch, he has a very simple approach. What's his approach? Rif, Rush, and Rambam. Okay? You have lots of cases where the Rif and the Rush and the Rambam say something, even though they may differ why they say it, and lots of other Rishonim don't agree. To arbitrarily decide that these were the most important Rishonim, the others were not as important, is something which certainly could be debated. The Chafetz Chaim, in his book on Lashon Hara, writes, he has a whole list of how many negative laws you break when you speak Lashon Hara. The 12th one is, source 16, V'machzik b'machlok edei de sipero over alalav delo ye kekorach v'chadato. He takes it at face value, like the Rif and the Rush, and he says, when you tell Lashon Hara about somebody, and there's the middle of a fight going on top of all the other laws that you broke, you also broke the law of causing dissension. By the way, he not only mentions this over here, he also mentions this in the Mishnah Berurah. There's one place in the Mishnah Berurah that he talks about all kinds of laws are introduced, in Siman Kufnun and Vav, and he mentions this as well, and he says it the same way. The Chafetz Chaim is consistent, right? And we all realize the Chafetz Chaim and the Mishnah Berurah are the same person, right? His name is Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan from the city of Radin. Source 17, we have an ancient and probably of all the sources that we've seen today, other than the Chumash and the Gemara, the most ancient source. This is one of the first post-Talmudic sources, and it's called the She'iltot of Rav Chai Gaon. The Shi'iltot, we've seen on other occasions, the Shi'iltot is a very interesting book. The Shi'iltot takes the Gemara, cuts it up in terms of the weekly portion, keeps the language of the Gemara, but theoretically, if you go through the whole Shi'iltot, you would know a great deal of the Gemara. So he cuts it up and puts it according to this weekly portion. Guess which law he finds in Parshat Korach. You need a law there. Which law is he going to find? So, source 17, Shi'ilta, da asur liot l'debet Yisrael l'me'avad plukta. Jews are not allowed to have arguments. Again, this doesn't mean two people can argue at a point of law. It means sustaining arguments. Jews are not allowed to be involved in arguments. Dekivin dekaimi biplukta, because if you are involved in an argument, atu lemisne hadadi, you may come to hate one another. V'amar rachmana lo tisnet achicha bilvavecha. Do not hate your brother in your heart. So what did the Shi'iltot do? He said that by getting involved in an argument, you're breaking a Torah law. Which Torah law are you breaking? He doesn't tell us it's the Torah law that we thought it was the whole time. So he now introduced a third different Torah law, which he's taken into consideration. What's that? It's one of hating one another. Which means, on the one hand, there's a mitzvah of after echa kamocha, that we need to love one another. On the other hand, there's a isser, there's a prohibition against hating one another. So he says, somebody who goes and causes dissension, causes arguments, will be breaking the Torah law. Which Torah law? Hating your brother in your heart. And that's what's going to be the result. And therefore, so it's interesting. He didn't say you'll be breaking the Torah law of acting like Korach. So apparently, the Shi'iltot did not understand that the Torah prohibition was acting like Korach. But he didn't have to. He felt that there's enough, meaning he felt acting like Korach is a bad idea, but by acting like Korach, you'll end up breaking a different Torah law, and that is hating your brother in your heart. Clear? Excuse me? No. As far as Bilbo Vecha, don't worry about that. That's the way the Torah is. Yeah. Which means you get this sense by Hillel and Shammai that this is machloket l'shem shemayim, and you still have one community, even though you have differences of opinion within law. When it comes to Korach, there you have somebody who's not accepting Moshe's authority, and you have dissension, and then again that leads to other things. There are other authorities that do similar things. The Radvaz, for example, I don't have this on this pages. The Radvaz, Rav David ben Zimra, he was a chief rabbi of Egypt 400 or 500 years ago, and he says that by acting like Korach, you'll be breaking the law. But what's the law that we're talking about? The law is following the majority, which is interesting because ultimately, in a Jewish court system, a Jewish community for that matter, there is a court system. The court system follows the majority. It's not an absolute democracy. It's following the majority of the judges. It's following the majority of the people who are ordained and given the ability and the right to adjudicate such cases. But he says that when people make machloket, they will be going against that authority. So again, he has it coming through the side door, but he ends up with the same kind of conclusion. We're just going to have two shelot and shuvot to look at. There were a lot more we could have brought. The first one is one of the Nitziv. Meshiv Dover, the Nitziv. By the way, the Nitziv has very interesting things to say about this week's portion, if you want to look at, in terms of Korach and Korach's followers. He does believe that some of them had sincerity, and some interesting things to say about the Machloka that took place then. But over here, in this tshuva, he deals with somebody. I mean, you have a town, you have a rabbi, and you have a shochet, and in most towns in Europe, the way that it worked is that you had one rabbi, and the one rabbi gave authority to the one or two or three shochtim, but they all listened to one rabbi. And then you have a town that a second rabbi shows up, and he brings his own shochet, and now you have two rabbis and two shochtim. So without going through the whole tshuva, people who just get a good feeling of the Nitziv's response over here to this. V'yesh esh mazik harbe v'lo amrahon, kachu esh hamachloket. There's incredible fire, and that's the fire of arguments. Pam nishka ha'esh u'pam magia mizeh hashchatat ta'ir. Sometimes it can go out once you start this, and sometimes it can destroy a whole city. U'mavdilim atzman mizeh mizeh, and it causes separation. U'mi goreim kol zeh, and who caused all this? Mi she'iz lavo lahasig gvul hakodem lo. The second guy who shows up after the first one was already there, and he does what he calls here hasagat gvul. What's hasagat gvul? Literally, it means moving a boundary. That's literally what hasagat gvul means. Torah level of hasagat gvul is my house is here and your house is there, my garden is here, yours is there, and we have a fence between us. In the middle of the night, I move the fence over 3 feet, and now I have 3 more feet of land. That's called stealing land. That is the Torah level of hasagat gvul. And I've stolen your property. We use the term for other things as well. So, for example, this rabbi is the rabbi of the city, and somebody else sets up shop. So he over here calls that hasagat gvul as well. It's a very interesting topic, which we could look at in terms of you have one store, can somebody else open up another store? How far from the first store can you open it up? What exactly are the parameters? That is often called hasagat gvul as well. Over here it says, me, who caused all this? Mi shei iz lavo lahasig gvul hakodem lo. The person who comes and tries to move over, you know, the boundary of the fellow who's there before him, and the person who tries to use power, relatives, others who could, to appoint him as a rabbi or as a shochet. This person's not only causing dissension, he's causing it. It's not just one of these cases where there's already an argument. This guy's creating it. Yesh meyayin. V'hine oto ha'ish enu machzik machloket l'chud, elo osem ha'machloket l'chamein ba'esh shalah, v'over alav shebetorah, and by doing this he breaks alav ha'torah, v'lo yekakorcha v'chadato. So he has no problem in the course of this tshuva to go and to use this as the source of not being allowed to make a machloket. V'akol osem b'shvil hana'at parnasa, and why is the guy doing it? To make a living. Umikri Rasha to Hamas. And if that's the case, then Nitziv then writes that this person is a wicked person who is sinning because of money. V'yadu b'choshen mishpat. And I just want you to appreciate how far now he's willing to go to take away this person's credentials. He says, we know in choshen mishpat to Rasha to Hamas that anybody who's a wicked person when it comes to money, pasula edut, is not allowed to be a witness. Afilu b'isur d'rabanan, even by rabbinical things. V'imkein harav ha'mesig gvul pasul le'edut. And therefore, this rabbi who set up shop, who is therefore taking this other part of this other person's parnasah, is pasul le'edut. Forget about being a rabbi now. The guy can't perform a wedding. The guy can't give a hechsher. The can't give a ve'eich efshar l'smocha ho'rotav. How can you listen to a rabbi who's a Russia? Oh, well, chizkat kashrut b'shchita. Well, listen, when he says something is kosher. So again, just to see how far the Nitziv was willing to go with this, I think was quite impressive. The flip side of the Nitziv's approach is found in a tshuva by Rav Menashe Klein. As I've told you before, Rav Menashe Klein is still alive. He's a contemporary, if we can call a man who's in his 80s a contemporary. He is a great Talmud Chacham. This was written in Tavshin Lamed Gimel, 1973. There was another tshuva of his, which was actually my first choice to teach about today, which I decided not to. And he recently published a tshuva written to followers of Chabad about their orientation towards the previous Rebbe. If you really want, then I will learn with you that tshuva. But it was not complimentary. There's another tshuva written on the same topic of this, which was written by Rav Avadya Yosef, which I also didn't bring here today, because that tshuva was written to the head of the Moetza Datit in Yerushalayim before the elections of the chief rabbis, where he's giving them a psak halacha, who should become the new chief rabbi, which was based upon Rav Avadya's opinion, which is also a very interesting tshuva, and as the Moetza Datit today in Yerushalayim is theoretically involved in appointing a new chief rabbi. It's also a very interesting tshuva to read, but we won't look at that. We'll look at his opinion. What does he call the title of the tshuva? Chiyuv l'kol kehila charedit l'kabel rav. The obligation of every single community to have a rabbi. He writes, Malich Zvor, Rabbani, Anechbad Ba'od Na'le, regarding your question, Shetcha Be'inyan Batei Knesiot HaCharedim, She'ein Luchim Rabbanim, Bifrat Hashtibalach Im Yafehim Osin. He says, what about all these shuls and all these shtibalach? These people come to davening, people gather together, and it's not like the big formalized shuls, the people come to daven together. Is this and they inevitably don't take rabbis in these places. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? He needs a kama pamim asher dibarti mizek, hu avel gadol mitrei ta'ame. He says, this is an incredibly bad thing for two reasons. Echot shu avla lebalei Torah, ולפנים זו בישראל, אשר כל תמיד ותיק הייתה שאיפתו להיות מורה הוראה בישראל, ובסוף יתקבל בתור רב ומורה צדק, וזה נותן סיפוק לבחורים ללמוד במרת רב וקנת סופרים, תרבר חכמה. He says it's for two reasons. First is, there's been a very long-standing Jewish tradition. And what is that? That students go to yeshiva in order to one day get a job, right? People go to yeshiva in order to one day get a job. He goes, this is a good thing. And what do they do? They're going to be sitting and learning. There'll be competition, which he says is a good thing. Competition in yeshiva is a good thing because the better students are going to get the better job. So he says, and he quotes the Gemara in that, kinat sofrim tarbeh chachma. When there's jealousy among scribes, among people involved in learning, tarbeh chachma, it causes more wisdom. So competition is a good thing over here. This is not talking about capitalism, although it may be true there as well. But he says competition is a positive thing. And he says, but something's happened. Lo kein b'vnatenu harabim. In our generation, it's not the case. Bizman hazeh, in our times, asher liyireim ein tzarech l'rabanim. Religious people don't need rabbis anymore. U'lebatei knesiot hamodernim einim rotzim lelech. And they don't want to go to the modern shuls, because as he's writing in 1973, the big shuls, the modern shuls, the young Israels, which he doesn't say by name, they all have rabbis. So here we have religious people. They don't want to go to the modern shuls, so they end up going to the shtibalach. U'memela nimtza Torah cholgeret sakba v'tein rambam. And the Torah is the one who's crying in the end. Sheinit, shakami yeshivot ayudeze, mistaklim v'shlila b'chlala morei hara v'talmidim asher mitkavnim liyot morei hara. The yeshivas look negatively on people who want to learn halacha to learn poskim. What do the yeshivas want the guys to do? You sit and learn Gemara. Somebody who actually wants to learn halacha to know what to do, that they don't do that in most yeshivas. Again, by the way, this is true still. Till today, this is true in most yeshivas. They just learn Gemara. And he says, and there's some yeshivas that don't even let them learn. And I know of a case, that there was a mashkiach in one of the big yeshivas, he does not tell us its name, she'amar b'sicha musarit, when he was giving a sicha musar, when he was getting up and giving a talk on how these people need to improve themselves, he wrote, she'asa lamot shulchan aruch yerdeya b'yeshiva. He says, you're not allowed to learn shulchan aruch yerdeya, which has to do with a lot of laws becoming a rabbi. And anybody who learns this without permission in the yeshiva, any food that he eats when he's in the yeshiva, he's stealing from the yeshiva. Because the purpose of yeshiva is to learn Gemara, and only Gemara. Only Gemara, and nothing else. Then we skipped a bit. You need rabbis and communities in order to instruct what to do and tell people what to avoid. Somebody to know how to apply one case to the other case, and so on. And the Jewish community should not become like a place that does not have any kind of leader. V'korev b'nai lomer. And I almost want to say, he says, he's hesitating a little bit, shekol eda v'kahal miYisrael, that any community in Israel, she'ein mamanim aleim chacham v'navon, she'e chacham gadol, kimo shekotov Rambam zal, anybody doesn't appoint somebody, harehu ke'over bilav, he breaks the law of, v'lo tia ki adat Hashem, ketzon asher ein lahem ro'eh. What does Moshe say when he says that Moshe is going to be, can't go into the land of Israel? He says, please, make sure you appoint a leader. You can't have the community of God without having a shepherd. How can you have a large community without having a shepherd? We need there to be leadership. So anybody who, any community that doesn't have a leader, they're going against the wishes of Moshe. He was warning them to be leaderless. Go look how Chazal interpreted the verse that we started with today, not to be like Korach. Anybody who causes there to be machloket is ultimately going to be like Korach. Gam anu ne'emar kol kahal ve'edam Yisrael she'ein sochrim ve'im aleim chacham ve'navon she'ya chacham gadol b'chachma v'yiret chayit. Any community that doesn't hire somebody to be their spiritual leader, havelo ka'ovim b'lav v'lo tiyek ke'adat Hashem kitzona she'ein leim ro'e v'zeh pushim umvuar. He says that what are you doing by not having somebody? You are ultimately causing there to be machloket. And what's the way of avoiding machloket? The way of avoiding machloket is having somebody who is a spiritual leader. And again, afterwards, people have to accept the spiritual leader, which is another point. But it's very interesting. Again, that's why I said that the Rav Menashe Klein and the Netziv were two sides of the same coin. The Netziv was dealing with a case where they had a spiritual leader and somebody else sets up shop and decides that he'll be the new spiritual leader. And we saw the way that Netziv decided to deal with that person by saying that this person, if he's doing it for the money, and therefore he's pasul la'edut, and therefore this person, any heksher that he gives is not kosher, and one cannot rely on such a person. And we see that Menashe Klein is looking at the Jewish community, and this is not an isolated case. He's lamenting the various yeshivot, and he's lamenting the various places where religious people pray, where inevitably they tend not to have spiritual leaders, and that ends up everybody doing whatever they want to do, and that ends up being, again, if you want to go back to Agudot, which he doesn't say by name, but that's what ends up happening, and therefore he feels, as you see very strongly, that a community that does not have this, not only do they break this sensibility of Moshe, who pleads with God to appoint a new leader in his stead, but this also will directly lead to this problem of being like Korach. So what did we see today? This is not talking about two people arguing about a point of law. It could be that two people arguing about a point of law could at some point deteriorate and get to a situation of the type of machloka which is not allowed. Which means over here we see, according to many Rishonim, right? It was many Rishonim, that there is a law against having a machloket. Some see it coming through this pasuk with Korach, some see it because of this idea of agudot, but we see that there is an absolute Torah law against having machloket. Some Rishonim limited it and said, no, it's only against, it's like Korach and fighting against the kahuna. As you said, some Rishonim did say this. As a conclusion, we see various poskim, we see the Chafetz Chaim, we see, again, many people following the Rif and the Rush, and it comes out the Rambam as well. So if you follow the sensibility of the Beit Yosef, that would, if those three say that something's a halacha, it's a halacha, so indeed this is certainly going to be seen as being halacha. But again, I don't have to sit here and give you logical reasons why machloket is a bad idea. But perhaps now you realize that not only is it not a good idea, not only is it something which is spiritually very painful for the collective, it is something which we see is most likely the breaking of the Torah law as well. Does that mean that one is never allowed to express an opinion? Does that mean that one is not allowed to ever turn around and say that I think something is being done in a wrong way? No, one is permitted to. But again, there's a difference between approaching the other person as somebody who has a right to make an opinion and having a conversation versus creating a war over something. So the creation of the war is something which is not allowed. And because of the consideration of Agudat Agudot, there are going to be various times. Again, I did not go into that. There's lots and lots of parameters over here, which was one of my thoughts maybe of talking about next week. There's lots of parameters, so then maybe we're not allowed to have tefillot of Ashkenaz and Sfarad in one community. Maybe you're not allowed to, I understand, but Agudot, maybe I can't have two different Beitin, which means where do you draw the line on this? So there again, there's a lot of material on this, and this is something, B'li Neder, we will come back to. But again, if it's accepted in a community that there's an Ashkenazi shul and there's a Sephardi shul, and that itself does not cause there to be tension, but it could be that opening up a new Ashkenazi shul because you don't like the first one, that could cause it. There are times that we need to back down from things that we would prefer for the sake of peace. But what I'm pointing out is that Moshe Rabbeinu himself, again, he was not going to say that Korach was right and back down, and he was not going to say that Datan Avira and that they were right, but he was willing to take steps in order to avoid a full-out argument. That's again, we'll go back to that first Rashi. That's what Rashi told us to notice over here, and that's the sensibility from the Gemara, which is really based upon Rav. And Rav was the one who said, and why is Moshe doing this? Because there's really a negative prohibition in there, in one of creating machloket. So even Moshe, when he knows that he's right, is willing to take steps like that. There are many cases that we don't have the same confidence that Moshe did, and we need to take steps to avoid there being machloket. Shabbat Shalom.